Thank you. Good afternoon or good morning to those of you on the West, and welcome to the Talking Freight Seminar Series. My name is Jennifer Simone, and I'll be moderating today's seminar. Today's topic is State Freight Advisory Committees. Before I go any further, I do want to let those of you who are calling into the teleconference for the audio know that you do need to mute your computer speakers, or else you'll be hearing your audio over the computer as well. Before we move into the seminar, I do want to let everybody know about the upcoming public input session for the Comprehensive Truck Size and Weight Limit Study to be held on May 29, 2013. MAP 21, Section 32801 requires the USDOT Secretary to complete a Comprehensive Truck Size and Weight Limit Study. The study will be conducted as an objective, data-driven initiative using the most current, best-suited analytical methods, tools, and models. The study will evaluate and compare the differences between trucks loaded at or below current federal truck size and weight limits to those operating in excess of those limits. It will produce findings on highway safety and truck crash frequency and severity, pavement and bridge infrastructure service life impacts, the cost and effectiveness of enforcement and implications for the national transportation system, including the modal share of freight movements that would result if federal truck size and weight limits were to change. The first public outreach session will provide stakeholders an opportunity to share feedback on the approach and methods USDOT intends to use to complete the study. The USDOT will also solicit comments on alternative truck configurations to be evaluated in the study. The meeting, which is free and open to the public, will be held as an in-person workshop, and webinar access is available for those unable to attend in person. Three additional public outreach sessions will be held over the next year and a half. To join in person or register for the webinar, please see the information on the slide on the screen. Today we'll have five presenters: Jim Cheatham, Director of the FHWA Office of Planning; Chip Millard of the FHWA Office of Freight Management and Operations; Paul Oberle and Will Gale of the Maryland Department of Transportation; and Sharon Clark of Purdue Agribusiness. James Cheatham is the Director of the Office of Planning in the Office of Planning, Environment, and Realty in the Federal Highway Administration. In this capacity, he serves as FHWA's principal advocate for metropolitan and statewide planning and programs, with the responsibility for development of policies, regulations, directives, and techniques to carry out the planning process. He also oversees the Administration Planning Research Program. Chip Millard is a transportation specialist with the FHWA Office of Freight Management and Operations. He specializes in providing situational awareness about freight issues for FHWA staff. He also manages activity for the FHWA Freight Council, which is composed of FHWA staff from the agency's headquarters, resource center, and division offices. Additionally, Chip is involved in the FHWA livability efforts, working to ensure freight needs are appropriately considered while promoting livable communities. Chip is a member of the Council of Supply Chain Management Professionals and participates in the Transportation Research Board's Urban Freight Committee. Paul Oberle is a freight policy analyst in the Office of Freight and Multimodalism at the Maryland Department of Transportation. He is currently providing project support to several rail study initiatives as well as outreach to local governments. Paul's experience with the Maryland Freight Mobility Plan and its development goes back to its inception in 2006. William Gale is a multimodal policy analyst with the Maryland Department of Transportation's Office of Freight and Multimodalism. In addition to managing MDOT's Freight Stakeholders Advisory Committee, he assists in analyzing, responding to, and shaping national transportation policy efforts like MAP 21 for freight and rail issues, as well as managing the Office of Freight and Multimodalism state and local policy efforts. Sharon Clark is Senior Vice President of Transportation and Regulatory Affairs with Purdue Agribusiness, LLC. She has been with Purdue since 1997 and manages corporate rail and truck transportation for grain and feed ingredients. Prior to joining Purdue, Sharon was with the Andersons Incorporated and Cargill Incorporated. Sharon serves on the Executive Committee and Board of Directors of the National Grain and Feed Association. She is Vice President and Treasurer of the North American Freight Car Association. She is also a member of the National Grain Car Council. Today's seminar will last 90 minutes, with 60 minutes allocated for the speakers and the final 30 minutes for audience question and answer. If during the presentations you think of a question, please type it into the chat area. Please make sure you send your question to everyone and indicate which presenter your question is for. The presenters will not be answering the questions during the presentations, but I'll start off the Q&A session with the questions typed into the chat box. The PowerPoint presentations used today are available for download from the file download box in the lower right corner of your screen. The presentations will also be available online within the next few weeks, along with the recording and transcript, and I'll notify all attendees once the materials are posted online. A few final notes: Talking Freight seminars are eligible for 1.5 certification maintenance credits for AICP members, and in order to obtain credit for today's seminar, You must have either logged in with your first and last name, or if you're attending with a group, type your name into the chat box. For those of you who are not AICP members but would like to receive PDH credits, please note that FHWA does not formally offer PDHs, but it may be possible to receive PDHs for your participation if you are able to self-certify. Please download the agenda from the file download box and submit it to your respective licensing agency. Finally, I encourage everyone to also please download the evaluation form from the file share box and submit it to me after you've filled it out. So we'll now go ahead and get started. Today's topic, for those of you who just joined us, is state freight advisory committees. And as a reminder, if you have questions during the presentation, please type them into the chat box and they'll be answered after all the presentations. So we're going to start off with our first presenter, Jim Cheatham, of the Director of the FHWA Office of Planning. Jim, you can go ahead.
Okay. Thank you, Jennifer. And everyone, welcome. I'm looking forward to this discussion on the Freight Advisory Committee and why FHWA is supporting this as a forum for stakeholder and public engagement from the freight and planning perspective. Public and stakeholder involvement is integral to a good transportation planning. Without meaningful stakeholder and public participation, there is a risk of making uninformed decisions or decisions that don't effectively address the transportation needs of freight. With good stakeholder and public engagement, the fundamental objective of public engagement is addressed. This is to ensure that the concerns and issues of everyone with a stake in transportation decisions are identified. Our Freight Advisory Committee can help address freight in the development of policies, programs, and projects being proposed as part of the statewide and metropolitan planning process. Next slide. Here are the importance of freight stakeholder and public involvement in need to ensure the freight transportation needs are addressed in the planning and programming and operation of transportation systems. Freight stakeholder and public input helps us gain the information that we need to know. This contributes to understanding what projects that we need to prioritize, how we would prioritize them, where some of the bottlenecks and other problems are. A freight advisory committee members represent the freight industry can help with that. States and regions have competing priorities as they move freight in and out of and through an area in balancing the needs of freight with economic development, safety, congestion, sustainability is best done early in the planning process. The private sector can provide detailed information on freight-related issues that might not be available from other stakeholder groups. Their perspective on congestion, say economic development, financing, incentives, environmental and security concerns is essential to information to inform those decisions. Public agencies can better understand goods movement needs in their area if they obtain input from private sector freight representatives moving freight on the transportation system. In recent years, there have been a number of states and urban areas where the business community has taken a strong leadership role in advocating for sufficient investment in transportation. Public agencies stand to gain a lot from the private sector input. Freight stakeholders provide input from the goods movement perspective into the transportation planning and programming processes that support the freight community and the regional economy. One of our biggest hurdles as planners must overcome is demonstrating and balancing conflicting needs within a region. Freight stakeholder and public involvement gives the freight community an important opportunity to voice their opinions, frame alternative solutions, and provide the freight perspective to the public, elected officials, and other agencies. Next slide. As you can see here, there's a listing of what advisory committees can do. Many states and regions and MPOs already have freight advisory committees. They go by many different names. Regions with extensive freight activity have found that a freight advisory committee is really important to obtaining freight input. As stated on the slide, the freight advisory committees facilitate participation of the private sector stakeholders. They ensure the freight transportation needs are addressed in the transportation planning programming process. They facilitate a safe and efficient movement of freight. They provide input on prioritizing freight investment by identifying high priority and state freight transportation projects. We at FHWA have long been an advocate of an effective stakeholder involvement as early as possible in the transportation planning process. We are pleased to see Congress also acknowledge this role for the freight community by specific mention of the Freight Advisory Committee in Map 21. With that short explanation, I also want to give you the contacts in my office, including myself, Spencer Stevens, and Jody McCullough. And you may be contact either of those in terms of the planning process and as it relates to freight. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you, Jim. We'll now move on to our next presentation, given by Chip Millard of the FHWA Office of Freight Management and Operations.
Okay. Thank you, Jennifer. Jim's presentation just focused on why state freight advisory committees are important and they're beneficial for states to form. And my presentation, which will also be pretty brief, will focus more on the who and how, who should be involved in these committees and how the members can be engaged. So I'll just try to go over that. And then the last few presentations will be from people that are actually on committees and talk about it more specifically. So I'll tie together here. This slide here just shows you the different provisions that are in Map 21. The provisions for the State Freight Advisory Committees are in Section 1117. Now, I think one thing to really emphasize here is that these committees are encouraged. They're not required, but they are encouraged to be formed. And you can see there on the second major bullet some of the types of stakeholders that should be available to participate, or you want to try to reach out to participate in these committees. And then the roles of the Freight Advisory Committee and how they can enhance the freight transportation planning that takes place in the state. Move on to the next slide. And with state freight advisory committees, who should participate? The public and private sector stakeholders who should be involved in the committee vary from state to state and depend on how freight is moved in the state and what companies or organizations are heavily involved in freight modes in the state. Major carriers, manufacturers, and other shippers that generate significant freight volumes are major employers in the state should be asked to participate. To reach out to the targeted members, utilize your existing contacts and available organizational and publication resources that targeted members belong to, or to provide contact information about targeted members. You know, utilize what you've already done. You can see there in the second set of bullet points, previous outreach efforts, with state freight plans or state transportation plans, you may have contacts that way. Looking at different organizations within your state governments, economic development offices at the state or potentially also at the regional level, chambers of commerce, other similar organizations, business trade journals, and freight-oriented professional organizations such as CFCMP, which is the Council of Supply Chain Management Professionals, or the APEX, which is the Association for Operations Management. They may have either people that are directly involved or they can point you to people that are involved in freight transportation efforts that would be good to have on your state freight advisory committees. Go to the next slide. With state freight advisory committees, it's important to think about how the participants, especially your private sector participants, how they can be engaged. It's important that there's two-way communication and that the participants that are in the committee have an opportunity to have their voices be heard. Their input is valued, whether it's in the form of presentations or setting aside time for brief reports. It's important that that the input that they have provides tangible benefits. Many private freight-oriented companies have time-sensitive daily schedules, so they need to believe that there is value to their participation in the State Freight Advisory Committee. At least one existing Freight Advisory Committee, and mind you, I'm thinking of an example, it's actually an MPO, but this is also at the state level, actually allows its members to vote on freight studies they'll receive funding. So it's an idea of actually having direct input into what kind of freight improvements the state may try to engage or try to fund. Allowing that input will allow to have or make it more likely there will be that buy-in. Allowing the freight transportation focused committee members to discuss their company's efforts in formal presentations, shorter status reports, organized site visits, allows the committee participants to better understand members' operations and promotes communication between committee participants. And that can include not only between the state government or other government entities and the private sector, the freight entities, but also between the different public sector entities that are involved, that kind of public-public communication, and also between the private sector entities that are involved, private-private communication. Move on to the next slide. And this just shows you some of the existing guidance resources that are available. If you're in the process of creating a new state freight advisory committee. A couple of suggestions is to reach out to the states or even the MPOs that have already established freight advisory committees. You don't have to reinvent the wheel. Get their feedback about the positive things, the good things that they've done, the things that have been successful, and also things that they've struggled with. You can also utilize existing resources that FHWA or other federal, state, or private entities have available to enable you to learn more about public sector, private sector engagement. And some of the last two major bullet points on there show you some of those resources that are available, especially the National Highway Institute courses that they're not necessarily specific to state freight advisory committees, but they do address freight planning and engaging the private sector, which are important considerations. So there's my contact information, email, and if you want to look at information on the FHWA Freight Office's website, the website link is provided. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Chip. Our next presentation will be given jointly by Paul Oberle and Will Gale of the Maryland Department of Transportation. So, Paul and Will, you can go ahead when you're ready.
Okay, thank you, Jennifer. This is Paul Oberle, and thanks also to everyone listening in on the webinar today. You heard a little bit about the federal perspective from Jim and Chip, so over the next few minutes, Will and I will try to share with you all our experiences here on the state level. Listed here are objectives for today's presentation. I'll begin from a more or less historical perspective, starting with an overview of the advisory committee, and then discuss a bit more about who is on the committee and how they were selected, and then finally offer some observations and lessons learned. I'm then going to hand things over to Will, who can talk about how the FSAC has evolved over time, and also discuss a bit about what we're looking forward to in the future. First of all, I thought it might be beneficial to show you the organization chart for Maryland DOT. What you see here is the overall umbrella of the department, the headquarters operation over our family of modal administrations, as well as the Maryland Transportation Authority. We're all funded through the same pot of money, save for the authority, which is our tolling agency that manages our six major toll facilities in the state. What I wanted to impress on you with this slide is that we're a multimodal department. And while each administration has a core mission to carry out, a common thread that runs through, each agency is addressing freight issues. So all of us deal with freight or freight-related activities in some capacity. So being multimodal has allowed us to collaborate on any number of study efforts. So we've had plenty of opportunities to interface with each other and also with the general freight community, and that, of course, includes the private sector. This next slide is an overview of the committee, and it might better be labeled the mission statement for the committee. It's more or less how we feel the committee should operate and the roles we'd like to see them fulfill. First of all, we wanted to make up of higher level industry leaders, and these would be the folks who could act as a spokesperson for their company and just be able to speak to overall policy and goals and objectives. Secondly, we wanted to get some diversity. We wanted to get the producers, the shippers, the receivers, railroads, steamship companies, just get as broad a cross-section as we could. Thirdly, we wanted to include different geographical areas of the state to just reflect what goes on in the different regions. For instance, farming and poultry production is on our eastern shore. Manufacturing, port-related activities are in Baltimore and central Maryland. And western Maryland has a lot of mining activity and truck terminal activities. And then we get more to the actual mission of the committee. The fourth bullet, seeking ways to enhance freight mobility, is just that. We wanted to get some real-world advice from the actual users of the transportation system and see what recommendations for improvements that they felt necessary. The fifth bullet, helping to determine how the freight system is used and could be improved, kind of goes hand in hand. These folks are, in fact, our direct customers. They have real-world experience with the transportation system and know its good points as well as its shortcomings. The next bullet, increasing Maryland's connectivity and competitiveness, refers to the economic growth we'd like to see happen with a healthy freight system. It also refers to Maryland's location in the middle of the eastern seaboard and the importance of connecting to other freight hubs in other regions. And an example of that would be improving our highway and rail connections out to the Ohio Valley. And some of those initiatives are happening now with CSX's Gateway Project, as well as Norfolk Southern's Crescent Corridor. The next bullet, safety and security, is pretty self-evident. We want to reduce our truck crashes, of course, rail accidents, and simply make sure that our safety efforts, such as truckway and inspection programs, are being effective. The next item, environmental preservation, addresses the overall issue of stewardship, impacts to the freight system that climate change is going to bring, and the need to just pay attention to good land use policies, especially in locating freight distribution points and also looking at furthering investments in rail infrastructure. Lastly, providing insight into future goods movement kind of comes full circle. This is where we continue to need more input from the private sector. We need to learn the real world issues they're facing, and in turn, they can learn what government can and can't do for them. So hopefully this committee provides a forum to have those kinds of conversations. Regarding background for the FSAC, I've noted on this slide that our activities began in earnest with the startup for the Maryland State Freight Plan, which was in 2006. That probably started the more earnest pursuit of getting an advisory committee up and running. But in actuality, we had been pursuing freight planning activities probably as far back as the year 2000. We had something internal called the Freight Movement Study. Another effort was called the Maryland Freight Strategy. We had participated in two iterations of MAROPS, which was the Mid-Atlantic Rail Operations Study. There was also a truck companion to that called MATOPS. We had had our Portside Access Study, which looked at land use around the Port of Baltimore. And without getting into the weeds with all these studies tried to accomplish, I will say that they provided ample opportunities to interact with the private sector. And these opportunities proved very valuable in getting just new and different pairs of eyes to look at all the issues. I'd add here also that in 2007, while we were getting the freight plan underway, the department hosted an initial day-long freight summit that included the freight stakeholders from all over the region. And many of the invitees were private sector representatives. So I think this really got the ball rolling in terms of communication and outreach from MDOT to the greater freight community. At any rate, back to the freight plan itself, we had seen what the private sector had to offer us in other efforts, so it was looked upon as being critical to have that participation in establishing the freight plan. So what I've listed here, the relevance, the credibility, the acceptance for our freight plan, we thought we could only be realized through a buy-in from the private sector. This next slide addresses our more or less qualifying issues for committee membership. Again, we've looked for executive level folks who could act as spokespersons for their firms. I also mentioned we were looking for as diverse a group as we could get. Also, it was recommended we give consideration to folks who had previous service on state committees and boards. That wasn't necessarily a requirement, but just another consideration. This slide addresses our selection process. You should know this was a very informal process. Recommendations for nominees came internally from our freight office, our planning office, our policy and government affairs office. We also received input from our modal administrations, particularly the port and our highway administration. And there definitely was a track record of staff being previously acquainted with or having worked with the nominees. So we developed a list of what we thought was a manageable number. If I recall correctly, we initially had about a dozen folks on the first committee. And then the candidate list was vetted with MDOT leadership, and after approval, invitations were sent out to the folks. Regarding meetings of the committee, well, first of all, for frequency of meetings, we found ourselves a bit more purpose-driven during the development of the plan and getting together, I'm going to say basically on a quarterly basis initially. Subsequent to that, after the plan was completed, we slacked off to probably once a year, and now we're trying to get back to a fairly consistent six-month interval between meetings. We hold most of our meetings here at MDOT headquarters, but we're flexible to go elsewhere. We're not that big of a state, so travel times aren't a major concern to too many people. Our agendas vary, but we certainly try to stay topical. For instance, here in Maryland, we just had a gas tax increase, our tolls are going up, and then on the federal level, MAP 21 just got new funding, so I think you'll find there are plenty of things to talk about, and obviously agendas will be suited to your own needs. So this will be my last slide here before I hand things over to Will, but I just want to share some observations and lessons learned about our experiences. Initially, our main concern was simply the development of the freight plan, and it was a narrow focus, and we realized quickly we needed to get a bit more global to keep the committee engaged. Secondly, and as if we didn't know, these folks are busy people, so scheduling meetings was problematic. What we did was plan well ahead of time, send out early emails, reminders, early agendas, and it seems to work. And if a member can't make it to a meeting, they generally feel it important enough to send a sub in their place. Thirdly, we have a strong state and local presence. Our membership is basically close to home, although we do have reps from CSX and Norfolk Southern, as well as Wilenius Wilhelmsen Shipping Line. And they can and do offer us some national and international perspective, and that's all been great information. It still would be nice, in my opinion, to hear from some of the major trucking firms, that'd be the Schneiders and the J.B. Hunts, the mega shippers, who they would dispatch their trucks from hundreds of miles away. And they're not located in Maryland, but their decisions certainly do affect what happens on our roadways. So a problem, how do you get them engaged and aware? So that's a future agenda item for us. The next bullet, probably an early sentiment, was perceived some skepticism over what government could really do. But I think these outreach efforts, like this committee, have gone far to creating a better understanding. We often do talk about what we can and can't do, and that comes from both sides of the table. The next item, brick and mortar projects, remain of high interest, but I think now the committee has a better appreciation of our policy decisions and where they take us as well. And finally, our members have stayed engaged. I think we still have some originals from 2006, and I'd say that probably reflects on the good relationships that we've all developed with them. We enjoy working with them and look forward to having our meetings. So with that, I'll turn things over to Will, who can speak to current activities and what's in store for the future.
Thank you, Paul. So now that we've heard a bit about the background of the Freight Stakeholder Advisory Committee, as Paul mentioned, I'd like to discuss how it was developed over the intervening years and what it's currently doing and what some of the upcoming activities will be. So although engagement with the private sector is nothing new to the department, we have already heard that the formation of the Freight Stakeholder Advisory Committee was initially focused on the development of the Maryland Statewide Freight Plan. So after completion of the plan, the committee's focus was expanded as it adapted to several external and internal developments. These developments included changes in the freight industry, passage of a federal surface transportation bill with significant freight provisions, and a strong institutional commitment to freight. Two corresponding internal freight advisory committees, the Intermodal Freight Committee, made up of internal modal staff, as well as the Interagency Coordinating Group, which is made up of enforcement and credentialing stakeholders, along with staff from the Maryland State Highway Administration and Maryland Transportation Authority, are all used to help keep freight issues top of mind. We view the Freight Stakeholder Advisory Committee as a forum for discussing and identifying the issues affecting freight mobility within Maryland and for generating ideas to improve it. Since the original FSAC, an effort to expand membership in order to increase participation and perspectives has occurred. To help streamline this effort, we found that making the selection process a bit less formal helps to provide fluidity and flexibility in the membership selection process. Since service on the committee is not an appointment, we have reformed the membership process by not formally vetting the nominees through Maryland Department of Transportation leadership. Rather, after identifying a prospective member, we invite them to the meeting so they can get a feel for the committee. And then if they're interested afterwards, we extend a written invitation for them to join. It is through this process that we've recently expanded participation to a number of new private and public sector participants. As Paul mentioned earlier, Maryland is comprised of a multimodal freight network encompassing maritime, highway, rail, and aviation modes. The pie chart shows the current multimodal composition of the Freight Stakeholder Advisory Committee as we strive towards this broader participation goal. To help achieve this goal, several months before our most recent Freight Stakeholder Advisory Committee, our office identified sectors that we would like to have increased representation on the committee from. We identified a need to strengthen short line representation, as well as participation among the freight forwarding brokerage sector and truck stop center operators, and targeted selected private sector participants within these industries to invite and join if interested. So with the freight plan completed and passage of MAP 21, encouraging the formation of stakeholder advisory committees, we've really tried to make the FSAC a more proactive body. We have found that the formation of a stakeholder advisory committee provides a unique ability to communicate with the private sector, and as such, we strive to make the meetings as informative and valuable as possible, while also leveraging their participation to better inform our needs. As Paul discussed, originally many of the members expressed interest in specific projects or modes that most benefited their industry. This insight into desired projects provided valuable guidance during the formation of the Maryland statewide freight plan and will continue. In addition to gathering feedback on specific projects or policies, we try to keep members engaged as much as possible. In structuring the discussion for the meetings, thought is given to what relevant freight topics should be provided to the stakeholders, as well as trying to provide them with outcome-based activities or presentations. Part of engaging FSAC members includes keeping the committee members up to date on the latest MDOT freight initiatives. Topics that are discussed are tailored to provide information that will be of interest and value to the diverse group. For example, the timing of our last meeting occurred just weeks after the completion of the Maryland General Assembly, so a brief presentation was provided by Maryland State Highway Administration staff on two state-sponsored bills important to truck safety. Additionally, having our Assistant Secretary for Transportation Policy and Freight on hand provided additional opportunities for dialogue and a chance for members to hear directly from Maryland Department of Transportation leadership, as well as for leadership to hear directly from the members. In addition to updates on state initiatives, presentations were given on topics we thought would be of value to other members. An overview of a short line railroad that operates in Maryland was provided, as well as providing members with an opportunity to join an infrastructure security partnership program with the FBI. FBI and Department of Homeland Security agents provided an overview of the program, why FSAC members should join, and were available to answer questions. As the Freight Stakeholder Advisory Committee continues to develop to meet the evolving needs of Maryland's freight network, increasing the diversity of membership will make the committee more able to lend insight into effective policy. We view this as an important step in maintaining a robust and effective committee that is able to help inform our efforts to meet the future needs of the private sector in Maryland. As I previously mentioned, providing committee members with updates on departmental initiatives and achievements is an important component of the meetings. However, the value for us comes in hearing from the private sector. As implementation of the many freight provisions in MAP 21 continue to be rolled out, we view this as a critical time for private sector participation. For instance, engaging FSAC members on issues like freight performance measures and the primary freight network, as well as by leveraging their participation in scenario planning exercises, we will be better able to target and respond to industry concerns now and in the future. In addition to these activities, we feel that FSAC can play an important role in future statewide freight planning efforts. Along with the Maryland Statewide Freight Plan, MDOT has many other modal plans that have freight elements which will be increasingly useful for the FSAC to be engaged in. Some of these plans include the Eastern Shore Strategic Rail Plan, the Freight System Performance Annual Report, and the Joint Maryland State Highway Administration and Maryland Transportation Authority's Statewide Freight Implementation Plan. In conjunction with freight planning efforts, education and outreach has been identified as an area in which MDOT could contribute its resources towards. For example, several FSAC members expressed frustration on a perceived lack of priority for freight movement during meetings with staff at the local level of government. MDOT is uniquely positioned among the modes to assist in a multimodal outreach effort to staff on the importance of freight planning to the local economy and employment. So as you can see, over the years, the FSAC has played an important function, and as future issues arise, it will continue to provide valuable insights and guidance in our efforts to provide a resilient and efficient multimodal freight network in Maryland. So thank you again for letting Maryland Department of Transportation participate in this Talking Freight webinar, and both Paul and I look forward to any questions you may have at the end of the presentation period. Also, I've included our contact information if you want to follow up with us offline at a later date.
All right. Thank you, Will and Paul. Our final presentation for today will be given by Sharon Clark of Purdue Agribusiness. So, Sharon, I will bring up your presentation, and you can go ahead.
Great. Thank you, Jennifer. And thank you for asking me to speak today. I began working with the Maryland Freight Stakeholder Steering Committee over 6 years ago. It has been a great experience, and I appreciate the opportunity to share some insights today. I would like to take a few moments to provide a brief overview of Purdue Agribusiness, discuss the importance of freight transportation in our business, share the benefits from participating on a state freight advisory committee from a private sector shipper's perspective, and finally share some insights gained about the public sector freight transportation planning process. Purdue is a privately owned company founded in 1920. Our current chairman and CEO, Jim Purdue, is the third generation Purdue to lead the company. Since its founding, Purdue has grown into the third largest poultry company and among the largest grain companies in the United States. Our businesses operate across the nation, and we have more than 20,000 associates with over $4.7 billion in annual sales. Purdue Agribusiness encompasses multiple businesses, including grain merchandising, soybean crushing and refining, trading, blending, and organic fertilizer, with sales to both domestic and international customers in the feed, pet food, fertilizer, and renewable fuel industries. Purdue Agribusiness originates, trades, and processes over 350 million bushels of grains and oilseeds and over 2 million tons of soy meal and feed ingredients annually. We celebrated our 50th anniversary in the soybean crushing business in 2011. Many folks don't know that Frank Purdue crushed his first soybean nearly 8 years before he processed his first chicken. We have three different corporations that comprise Purdue Agribusiness, and I'll briefly describe each of our three businesses. The first corporation I'm going to talk about is our Grain and Oilseed LLC. It is our largest corporation, and it may also be our most complex corporation, incorporating our grain merchandising, soybean crushing and refining, and international import-export business. G&O's supply chain reaches from the farmer to consumers of grain and oilseeds overseas. We partner with nearly 24,000 farmers in the eastern U.S. to originate grain, and we sell commodities in over 54 countries. Our second corporation is Purdue Ag Solutions, LLC. This corporation trades approximately 2 million tons of feed ingredients annually to poultry, dairy, swine, and cattle markets, and handles numerous ag commodities including soy meal, canola meal, soy hull pellets, and dried distillers grains, or DDGs. In addition, this corporation provides specialized protein blend feed ingredients to domestic and international markets. Our third corporation is Purdue AgriRecycle, LLC. PAR operates the first ever large-scale facility for manufacturing organic fertilizer from poultry litter. PAR represents a significant environmental stewardship effort on the part of Purdue to provide effective market channels for poultry litter. Since 2001, PAR has developed new markets for poultry litter, including use as the primary ingredient for Scott's Miracle-Gro organic potting soil and Espoma's garden fertilizers. It is also used as a low NPK nutrient for golf course greens. We have recently installed a prilling line, which is opening up a host of new marketing applications. Purdue is truly a farm-to-fork operation. Our 24,000 farm partners begin the transportation journey by harvesting grains and oilseeds and transporting this product to their local grain elevator. Once grain is received at the grain elevator, it can be loaded out by truck, rail, or barge, depending on the facility's capabilities. The grain can then go to multiple destinations, including feed mills, export elevators, processors, or ethanol or biodiesel plants. Similar to other businesses, transportation modes, carriers, and routes are selected on the basis of price, service, availability of equipment, and infrastructure. Purdue Agribusiness primarily deals in bulk agricultural products, so size does matter, and volume shipments translate into lower freight costs. As many on the call already know, a rail car hauls the equivalent of four trucks, a barge hauls the equivalent of 15 rail cars, or 60 trucks, and a Panamax vessel hauls the equivalent of 305 barges, or 4,575 rail cars, or 19,400 trucks on one boat. Our Chesapeake, Virginia import-export terminal provides us with the maximum number, possible number of freight options, including truck, container, rail, barge, vessel, and pipeline. So why is freight important to Purdue Agribusiness? Freight is a significant component of the trade in grain and feed ingredients. The supply chain is critical to ensuring timely, efficient, and cost-competitive delivery to our customers. Purdue Agribusiness dispatches over 175,000 trucks. We handle over 50,000 rail cars. We dispatch over 350 barges and ship over 125 vessels annually. This activity does not include the tens of thousands of truck trips that encompass the farmers' delivery of grain to our facilities. Like many other states, Maryland is faced with significant growth challenges. Maryland's population is expected to grow by 1 million people by 2035, and freight activity is expected to double. Maryland has some of the worst traffic congestion in the country, with Washington, D.C. ranking first and Baltimore ranking sixth in delay per auto commuter, and Maryland commuters are experiencing the longest average commute time to work in the nation. Funding is also an issue. The Maryland State Highway Administration currently spends 82% of its capital budget just to maintain the highway system. Business and community leaders are increasingly recognizing that efficient transportation is a key factor in statewide competitiveness and an important consideration in business expansion, attraction, and retention decisions. I am fortunate to work for a company in which our chairman, Jim Perdue, and our senior managers are committed to corporate responsibility and community involvement. We value opportunities to serve in public-private forums such as the Stakeholders Committee, with hopes of contributing information about our constituents' concerns, which include our farmers, our customers, our vendors, and our associates. Participating in the Freight Stakeholders Advisory Committee allows us to exchange information with public and private concerns. Importantly, the Maryland officials are focused on integrating freight into the transportation planning process and including private stakeholders in this process. Frank Perdue used to say, "Be part of something bigger than your own self." That something can be family, pursuit of knowledge, the environment, or whatever you choose. For me personally, competitive freight transportation to support the agricultural supply chain is a passion. With world demand for food projected to increase 70% by the year 2050, it is critical that we secure the supply chain for future generations. Benefits Purdue has derived from participating on this committee include, first, a better understanding of freight trends and how they may impact our business. Secondly, a better understanding of resources that are available to support our freight network, such as economic development efforts. And thirdly, an understanding of what other public and private stakeholders are doing to address their freight concerns, with the intent that we can then adopt best practices. There are also specific tactical benefits that come out of the robust discussions at stakeholder meetings. For example, the Maryland State Police, the State Highway Administration, and Maryland Farm Bureau recently hosted a forum which over 75 farmers attended on the eastern shore of Maryland specifically to discuss truck regulations, including weights, inspections, licensing, and hours of service. This was a positive outgrowth from a State Highway Administration presentation at a recent stakeholders meeting in which shippers asked for more information on state regulations and compliance. Insights I've gained through the process of being involved in the statewide freight planning process include, first, that more is better. Each freight stakeholder has something to contribute, and the more we can engage folks to voice their opinions, the stronger our transportation policies will become. Second, Maryland's public officials have a long-term commitment to developing a statewide transportation plan, and they have a detailed process in place to achieve a successful product. This includes evaluating transportation system preservation, services, and opportunities based on the goals and objectives of the Maryland Transportation Plan and added to the Consolidated Transportation Program. Third, transportation decisions are not made in a vacuum. Economic objectives, environmental objectives, and land use objectives are just some of the related areas that can be impacted by transportation. And finally, we all have to remember that freight has no conscience. If we cannot provide an efficient and competitive transportation network in Maryland, our constituents will seek one elsewhere. Transportation is about connectivity. Transportation is about access to home, jobs, healthcare, education, movement of goods and services, and recreation, which can lead to a higher quality of life. I consider myself extremely fortunate to have had the opportunity to participate with other public and private stakeholders to try to make a better future for Marylanders. Thank you for your time.
Well, thank you, Sharon.